They call you Lady Luck, but there is room for doubt. At times you have a very unladylike way of running out. You're on this date with me. The pickings have been lush. And yet before this evening is over, you might give me the brush. You might forget your manners. You might refuse to stay. And so the best that I can do is pray. Be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck, if you've ever been a lady to begin with, luck be a lady tonight.
From somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, if you haven't figured it out yet, we're going to talk about luck tonight with our guest Randall Fitzgerald right here on Coast to Coast. And, you know, I was looking at his website earlier today, and he points out one of my favorite movies that I was going to talk with him about, and we will. But listen to this, in case you haven't seen this movie. It's called The Cooler. It's out on video now. Very unique movie. It's different. It's about the subject of luck. It's about the energy force that people channel, lucky people channel. Now, actor in this movie, William Macy, plays a character named Bernie who works for the Golden Shangri-La Casino in Las Vegas. Now, he's a cooler, and that's someone who carries out negative charges, and he can cool off hot streaks of luck being experienced by gamblers, and thereby saving a lot of money for the casino. Now, all Bernie needs to do is stand next to the gambler, and in his words, their luck merely turns, I do it by being myself. While Bernie is portrayed as a born loser, someone who attracts bad luck by his very nature, in the real world, according to Randall Fitzgerald, of course, even mathematicians and probability theorists talk in these terms. Out of 6 billion people here on planet Earth, the law of averages dictate that X number of them will either be lucky or unlucky for their entire lives. In this movie, Bernie is a lonely bachelor who gets lucky with a cocktail waitress at the casino. He falls in love. His luck immediately flips from a negative to a positive charge. Everyone he touches or stands beside becomes lucky instead of unlucky. And guess what? It costs the casino a small fortune. Everybody starts to win. Well, when the love interest leaves him, under circumstances that you'll need to look at the video for, I'm not going to tell you that, he becomes depressed once more, and that low voltage again drains the power of the luck streaks going on around him. Energy, positive energy. We're going to be back in a moment with our guest Randall Fitzgerald. His book, Lucky You, Proven Strategies You Can Use to Find Your Fortune, his website, drluck.com. Randall Fitzgerald began his journalism career in 1974 in Washington, D.C. as an investigative reporter for syndicated columnist Jack Anderson. He has since written for The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, and for 20-plus years, editor with Reader's Digest. Randall is senior editor of Phenomena Magazine and the author of several books. His latest book, Lucky You, Proven Strategies You Can Use to Find Your Fortune, concerns paranormal luck and how we can channel it to our financial benefit. We're going to talk about that tonight on Coast to Coast. Randall, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. Happy St. Patrick's Day to
you, indeed.
George.
What do they always say? The luck of the Irish.
Oh, the luck of the Irish. You know, I've been curious about that all of my life, being part Irish. And I've always wondered, are the Irish really any luckier than any other group of people or any other country or culture? And I actually don't think so, but there are certain things that set the Irish apart from other Western countries. For one thing, Irish luck is really about a respect and reverence for the forces of nature, and certainly the forces of human nature. You know, if we look at the luck rituals of Ireland, the color green, for instance, which is usually associated with the Irish and the observance of St. Patrick's Day, well, what is that? Is that really a lucky color? Why are people supposed to wear green on St. Patrick's Day? Well, the reason is because in ancient Irish Celtic tradition, green represented spring and a time for renewal and a time for reproduction. And in the Druid order, when newly initiated priests were given their robes, the robes were always green. And that was considered good luck for the new Druid priest. You know, and green is the color of our money, so it's, you know, the color of prosperity here. And, you know, we see green popping up everywhere, but it started with the Irish.
And the four-leaf clover is green, too, isn't it?
Indeed, and the four-leaf clover is considered lucky because it's so rare in nature.
You know, your website, and I just love the story of the movie The Cooler, because I've always believed that positive energy changes so much in one's life, whether it's the perception of luck or anything else, and that negativity just kind of wipes it all out. That movie was so representative of what we're talking about tonight, Randall. I mean, I got a kick out of it. This guy was so negative that no matter what he did, you know, just people's fortunes just went out the window when he walked by them.
You know, I think all of us can see ourselves in that character that William Macy portrayed so well, sort of a bit down on his luck and feeling as if life was conspiring against him. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, something would happen and his outlook would brighten, and suddenly broad horizons were in front of him, and he would elevate his energy and in so doing change everything around him. And I know I felt that way myself in my own life at various times, as in attitudes and behaviors truly do create a sort of container that can either deplete the charge of luck as an energetic force or channel it.
And when you find your fortune with good luck, it's not just money. It could be anything. It could be a good job you like. It could be your love life. It could be, I think, anything that's positive within yourself, isn't it?
Yes, it doesn't have to revolve around money. It's really all about whatever makes us happy. You know, luck is connected to happiness, and bad luck is traditionally connected to misfortune and unhappiness.
Give me your take on this, talking about money for a moment. A couple weeks ago, one of our special guests, Glynis McCants, is on the show. She's a numerologist. We call her the numbers lady.
Ah, yes, and I've heard of her.
She suggested for people, somehow the number 8, and I'll get your take on this, the number 8 helps people with their own fortunes and riches. And she said, take a number 8. You can either write it on a card and put it in your wallet or purse. Go buy one of these number 8s from a hardware store that you see on mailboxes, a plain card with an 8 on it, and just keep it with you and watch what happens. And sure enough, Randall, I started getting emails, and she did too, from hundreds, if not thousands of people who had some incredible, remarkable things to say ever since they put that number 8 either in their wallet, on their purse, maybe on their computer. I mean, things, they got $500. It happened to me. I got $500 out of nowhere. You know, like 2 days later, other people have gotten $25,000. Now, this seems to be tied into money for some reason. But she also said it doesn't work if you're negative. If you don't believe this, it's not going to work. So the question to you is how important then is your mindset or that positive energy in order to create any of this?
Well, first, let me point out that in the Far East, in China in particular, the number 8 is considered lucky. So there's a lot of competition among the Chinese to get the number 8 in their telephone numbers, in their addresses, on their license plates. It really is very competitive there, and 8 is venerated, just like the number 7 is venerated in some sectors of Western civilization. So then the question becomes, yes, about attitude, about belief systems. I think we're getting into the whole area of lucky charms and talismans and carrying something around, whether it's a rabbit's foot or something that has some importance to us, where we have a belief associated with it that somehow it's going to invite luck into our lives. I truly believe that attitudes and behaviors are important.
What is the charm without the belief system?
Yes.
Nothing, I would assume.
Yes, it is nothing. I mean, Niels Bohr, the famous physicist of the 20th century, had a rabbit's foot tacked on the outside of his laboratory door. And scientists would come and visit him, and finally one remarked, how can a man of rationality like you have a superstitious talisman like a rabbit's foot tacked to your door of your laboratory where you do all of this research? And Niels Bohr's response was a classic. He said, well, I understand it works for you whether you believe in it or not.
It's simple as that.
Yes.
Simple as that. And I got to tell you, I don't know the history behind the rabbit's foot, but it sure wasn't lucky for the rabbit.
No, it wasn't. It actually is a luck tradition that was brought over by African slaves to America. In many African cultures, chasing a rabbit and then cutting off its foot would give one the feeling of being as speedy and as elusive as a rabbit.
The belief of luck with charms and things like that, does that also hold true for people who have all kinds of superstitions?
Well, superstitions, that's an interesting topic. I've been exploring that. You know, we have many behaviors that are considered superstitions, whether it's luck charms, in which we try to beg a favor from chance. Now, they may be irrational, and sometimes we feel very silly when we use them. I know I do. But there are profound reasons for holding superstitions. In traditional societies, they always take into account invisible forces in order to try and keep their lives in balance. Bad luck is thought to follow if they violate these practices. This is very true in Ireland. Now, the Irish have a lot of rituals and traditions around this idea that superstition is as irrational as it appears and feels, is somehow important to the cohesion of society. And lucky talismans and rituals help to create a certainty and a confidence in people. And that seems to help some people develop the positive attitude that's necessary to attract good luck.
You know, I'm through this interview with you, Randall, and I haven't even asked you what your own definition of luck is. So what is it?
My luck definition is rather broad. Since I was on your show last summer, June the 3rd.
The day before my birthday.
Indeed. That was a wonderful that was a wonderful commemoration that was given for you. I've gone into a really deep study of what is luck, and more I find that it's connected to intuition. And I link intuition and luck under the banner of intuitive luck now, in looking at how it affects all aspects of our life. You pointed out that it's not just about money. You know, money is just a way to keep score in a certain respect. But it's also about being able to intuit the intentions of other people and do so in a way that allows us to avoid bad luck in having a relationship with that person, or enables us to have good luck based on a relationship that we might not otherwise have. So my definition of intuitive luck is that level of being able to tap into a broad body of knowledge that transcends our own ego and our own self.
And you know what? I think you have to be happy within yourself. I have seen so many people who have a lot of money, Randall, and they're not happy people. They are not happy people. They could make more money than God, and they just aren't happy people. And so, you know, I guess most people would say, I'd rather have it than not. But if you're not a happy person from the get-go, all the money in the world is not going to make you happy. If anything, you probably end up being more miserable.
And this is very true. I just wrote an article for my newsletter, The Science of Luck, about Jack Whitaker, the fellow in West Virginia who won the Powerball lottery a few years ago. He won like $118 million after taxes. And what has happened to him in the 2 years since he won the Powerball lottery is a classic example of bad luck that flows from negative or toxic attitudes and behaviors. His granddaughter was murdered. He ended up being arrested for drunken driving and then arrested for assaulting someone. And it's like a litany of eight or nine events in his life.
Is he the guy that somebody, he was keeping money in a briefcase in his car?
Indeed.
Somebody broke in and took it?
He was inside of a CD strip club, and he had $538,000 in a briefcase.
In his car.
Broke in and stole it.
In his car.
Yes.
I guess he was boasting to one of the dancers.
Yes.
And then she told her boyfriend, and he broke into the car while he was in this place.
He's just had a stream of bad luck in his wake. And now he's been quoted as saying, "I wish I'd never won that money."
You know what? There are a lot of people who have won lotteries, huge dollars, and their lives are worse than before.
Well, it's amazing. It gets back to toxic attitudes and behaviors. You know, if we're blessed by good fortune, especially when it comes to money, and we still have toxic attitudes and behaviors, then we're going to go bankrupt, and we're going to lose everything. Mm-hmm. We're going to start all over again. And I've got case after case of examples of people who have won state lotteries. I've got a case on the East Coast of a woman who won a state lottery twice, 1985 and 1986. And now she lives in a trailer park and collects food stamps.
What happened to the money?
She went to Atlantic City, and she developed a gambling habit, and she lost it all.
Oh, my. Of course, you know what? I hope she's happier now.
Well, she certainly learned some valuable lessons.
Absolutely.
But those are very expensive lessons for anyone to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, and you look at people like Mike Tyson and people who have had this considerable wealth before. It's all gone. They must have had luck to get there in the first place, though, don't you think?
Luck and skill and hard work and determination, all of that. But it seems as though intuitive luck, knowing when to make decisions, and those turn out to be the right decisions, that quite often guides people toward what prosperity they accumulate.
Do you find that successful people have a certain trait about them that if you were to put it in a computer, it would spit it out and they'd be very similar on certain things?
This is a question I've been asking in interviews with people that are successful in various ways. And what I get back, you know, aside from positive attitude, I mean, if we look at all of the books, all the self-help books that are out there having to do with, you know, how to succeed in your life, they all mention positive attitude. They all mention being extroverted and outgoing and chatting up people. And, you know, there's just certain basics. But what they only mention in passing is, again, intuition. And I keep coming back and focusing on that because in my interviews with successful people, they always talk about the gut hunch. They always talk about having this strong feeling that something had to happen in that moment, or this capacity for snap judgments that are on target. You know, this is a theme again and again that I find among really highly successful people.
And they know how to react when they get that gut hunch.
Yes, they know how to interpret their intuition, and I'd love to talk with you on this program in the next few minutes in depth about how can we decipher in our own bodies, each of us individually, where we're receiving those intuitive signals, that intuitive information, and how to decipher it and utilize it accurately.
Well, you know, Randall, it took me, it's a personal story here, it took me years to realize that I had, and I believe I have, a very incredible intuitive nature about me. But it took me years to realize that and to begin to act on it. Because as I look back now, I mean, we've all made mistakes in our lives, but had I listened to that intuitiveness that was in me on everything I had done, I mean, there's no telling what I might have been able to have accomplished. I mean, everything I've done now, and I'm very happy with what I'm doing career-wise, I've been a very late bloomer. I mean, this is all relatively new for me.
Mm-hmm.
And but had I reacted to those hunches 25, 30 years ago, it would have been a different story a long time ago. And I didn't see the signs, Randall.
Yeah, I'm a late bloomer, too. I share that sentiment exactly.
Well, stay with us. We'll be back with Randall Fitzgerald. Lucky you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now. City of Angels, Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, are you a fan of the Coast to Coast bumper music? Well, we've got some of it for you on this double series of the After Dark CD for you, plus ghost stories and some very strange phone calls to the program. Great material. 2.5 hours worth, as a matter of fact. You can pick up the double CD by going to afterdarkcd.com. That's www.afterdarkcd.com or call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. That's 1-800-598-2331. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Randall Fitzgerald, our guest. Randall, let's pick up where we left off about this intuition, that something that is in our... Is it in our brain? Is it in our gut? Where is it, really?
Well, interestingly enough, the number one book right now on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list is called Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, whose last book was The Tipping Point. And Blink is about intuition. And he writes about it from sort of a classic scientific materialist point of view. He talks about our ability to make accurate snap judgments based on very little information. Well, his term for intuition is the adaptive unconscious. And he talks in terms of how the adaptive unconscious is a personal accumulation of all of our experiences and insights through our life that's absorbed by the unconscious mind, and then suddenly released in a split-second judgment or decision-making. Well, I accept that level, the adaptive unconscious, but I go beyond that in terms of my definition of intuition. I also believe there's a deeper level of intuition, the transcendent unconscious is what I call it, and it's a feeling of having tapped into a collective knowledge or wisdom that gives us a glimpse, sometimes, of the near future. And it also occurs spontaneously, and it can be cultivated using a range of techniques. And everyone seems to experience intuition in a somewhat different way. For some people, it's literally in the solar plexus, in the gut. It's the gut hunch. For other people, it's in the heart with an accelerated heartbeat. For others, it's this flash of a sense of knowing. Sometimes it's a prickly sensation. There are a lot of bodily sensations associated with it. You know, for myself, the times that I've experienced intuition, sometimes it's been a mixture of all of that. It's been like an adrenaline shot, and suddenly, you know, I sense an excitement, and I have no idea why. There are no visual cues. There's no sense that anything in particular by way of a thought has come up, but suddenly I'll have this heightened sense of clarity and a feeling of knowing something is about to happen, and not knowing why. And then suddenly, when it does happen, maybe it'll be a few minutes later, sometimes it'll be a day later, but there's this affirmation that the truth of intuition sometimes is almost miraculous.
I've had that feeling as well. You just know it's going to occur. And it's almost to a point sometimes, Randall, where you just sit back and wait for it, because you know it's going to happen within minutes, let's say, and it does. But why? How does it happen? Is it scientific? Is it metaphysical? Is it another dimension out there that we've tapped into? What is it?
You know that we have two brains, and I'm not talking science fiction here.
Oh, now, are we talking about the reptilian brain?
No. We have the brain that we're all familiar with. That's the one between our ears, the cranial brain. But we have a second brain in our digestive system. And this second brain has just as many neurons and just as many neurotransmitters as our primary brain. But these neurons are located in the sheaths of tissue lining our stomach, our small intestine, and our colon. Now, this has been medically shown within the last 5 or 6 years. There are numerous experiments, so there even have been books written called, you know, Our Second Brain. So when we hear the phrase gut hunch, that is quite literally true.
Or in my case, when people accused me of sitting on my brain, that was true too.
Yes, that too. Well, the medical scientist who has pioneered the discoveries about our second brain is Dr. Michael Gershon of Columbia University in New York. And he describes how our gut brain, as he calls it, is able to learn, to remember, and to produce emotion-based feelings just like our primary brain does. And the two brains communicate with each other.
I didn't know that.
Yes, the two brains communicate through the enteric nervous system. And neuroscientists are coming to the conclusion that our gut brain is the source for unconscious decisions that our primary brain, our cranial brain, later claims as a conscious decision of its own.
That's fascinating.
And it's my contention that is the second brain is the receiver of a lot of the intuitive signals, literally making the gut hunch true. And here's where the research gets really interesting and where we can begin to make some practical use of the information. At the Institute of Noetic Sciences, Dr. Dean Radin, who you've had on your program,
sure we have, yeah,
has done many experiments demonstrating that the human gut reacts to emotionally disturbing information 5 to 7 seconds before disturbing images are even flashed in front of a person. He's done a series, he calls it presentiment, he's done a series of these experiments. In other words, we experience precognition every time we receive intuitive signals in our gut brain. And the implication of this finding is nothing short of extraordinary. But before I get into the practical applications, and I talk about this in the Science of Luck newsletter, there's a whole other study that really fits into this. At the HeartMath Institute, which is a medical research lab in California devoted to studies of the human heart, they've done experiments showing how some people, especially women, receive intuitive information first in their hearts. And here's how the experiment worked. They took 26 volunteers, 11 male, 15 female, and each person was hooked up to monitoring equipment to measure their heart reactions to a random series of pictures that were flashed on a screen in front of them, much like Dean Radin's experiment with the gut. Well, these images were a mixture of calm scenes like flowing water and emotionally arousing scenes like car wrecks. About 4 to 7 seconds before the test subjects were actually confronted with or exposed with the disturbing images, a change occurred in their heartbeats. Their hearts were reacting to emotional stimulation that hadn't even appeared in front of them yet.
So it was almost as if they knew, something in your system knew what these pictures were going to be.
Yes, the even body, before the body was acting in a precognitive way.
That's
just as in Dean Radin's experiments. So here is where we have a bit of a separation between how women experience intuition and how men experience intuition. At the Heart Math Institute, they discovered that women, generally speaking, experienced intuitive signals in their heart more commonly than men, whereas in Dean Radin's experiments, he's discovered that men more commonly receive intuitive information in their guts.
And is that why one would say women tend to be more emotional, more romantic?
And more heart-centered.
And more heart-centered.
It's the old saying that women feel from their hearts and men
not in all cases. Not in all cases.
No, not at all. But as a general rule in these experiments, that's the finding that emerged.
This process that we go through sounds then to me biological, but I've got to believe, and I think you do too, that there's more to it than that.
Yes, more to it than maybe even cellular consciousness.
Yes.
There's a strong feeling, and here I'm becoming intuitive because I have no firm evidence, but my intuition tells me that we, in our bodies, are like some sort of transmitter and receiver. And when we are a receiver and we're able to pick up information through particular body organs, whether it's the gut or the heart, and we're picking up information that has to do with our emotional well-being, these are like emotional signals from the future, then we're tapping into a much broader body of knowledge than we personally have a reservoir of within ourselves. We're like a lightning rod, a divining rod.
Is there also, as I call the wireless matrix out there, that some people who are more intuitive, more positive, more luckier than the others, tap into than the other person?
It certainly feels that way. It certainly seems that way. You know, some people just, I don't know whether they vibrate at a higher frequency than other people or whether there's something genetic or some sort of attunement that comes about for karmic reasons. I mean, we could speculate endlessly about why certain individuals seem luckier than others, but I bring it back again and again to intuition, and I always ask people when I interview them, where in your body do you feel intuition? How does it come to you, and in what circumstances and situations? And as we begin to focus in on how we as individuals experience intuition, then we open up the possibility of eventually, through biofeedback and other means, being able to willfully induce these states of consciousness.
Why is it, Randall, that sometimes when you just go with the flow, you don't push, you just do it naturally, whatever it may be, and it tends to work out for you. Yet when you push for something and you've got to do this, chances are it's not going to happen. It just doesn't work. Just a bizarre example. You've played blackjack before, right? If you go to play blackjack and you say to yourself, I've got to win. I just have to win. Chances are you're not going to win. It's going to be a disaster for you. But if you go in there and sit down and just have a good time and relax and play with your friends and laugh, you're probably going to win. I've seen people win playing blackjack, and they're not even watching the table. I mean, they're just... the chips just keep flowing. And then you've got some other guy who's huddled over his cards and he's complaining every time he gets a bad card, and he loses constantly over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
To me, there's got to be there's something here. There's a theory somewhere if you just let it happen, if you go with the flow. Because I've seen it happen way too many times.
Yes, we talked in the last program about beginner's luck and what are the qualities, the attitudes and behaviors that define beginner's luck. And a lot of it is just being carefree, not having a lot of attachment, being willing to have fun with it, being willing to fail. Everything that our mind and our ego tends to constrict and put a straitjacket on, being free of that. And once we're in that place, whether it's as a beginner or whether it's as a veteran, simply being able to replicate beginner's luck again and again, then we're into, as you put it, the flow. And that flow puts us in a place where we can better our lives.
And, you know, it happens in relationships. It happens in your job. I'll give you two examples, and then you know, share some stories with us as well. I knew a guy who he wanted a job at a bank so badly. He was going crazy, and he kept telling me, and this was years ago. He said, you know, he had his interview, and they said, we'll call you back. And he wanted to call the guy who did the interview. He wanted to call him back like a half hour after he had left. And I said, no, don't. I said, if they're interested in you, they'll call you. And maybe the next day the call didn't come in. I've got to call them. I've got to ask them if they like me, if they're going to offer me the job. And I told him again, Randall. I said, you know, I'll use Tom. I said, Tom, if they want you, they're going to call you. And, you know, sure enough, that guy pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. He didn't get the job.
Mm-hmm.
Other people I've seen where you just go on the interview, you do a good job, and you lay back, they get the call. They always get the call. And, you know, the bottom line is that these things, if they're meant to be, are going to happen to you if you have that mindset. But it's the people who push and prod. I've seen it in relationships. Some guy will call a girl 25 times. She doesn't want anything to do with him. Yet the guy who just lays back and maybe makes a call, maybe even doesn't show any interest, all of a sudden he gets the dates. Why is that?
Remember that old expression, what we fear most in life will eventually get us?
Yep.
Well, our fears quite often define who we are in the moment, and for some people, who they are in their entire lives. And those fears, those anxieties, you know, it's like we're projecting that out into other people, certainly out into a dimension where we can affect other people. And yes, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if we haven't totally cleansed our unconscious mind of all of those negative, toxic thoughts.
Negativity will wipe you out, won't it?
It will indeed. I see it again and again.
Is it tied into evil at all? All right, you gave me a definition for luck. Give me a definition for negativity. What is that?
Negativity, to me, is that form of doubt, which involves cynicism. I always draw a separation between skepticism and cynicism. You know, skepticism is trying to keep an open mind and asking questions, whereas a cynic, you know, the classic definition is a sniveling disbelief in virtue. So a cynical person is someone who has taken negativity into the realm of the toxic.
Is a negative person a bad person?
Not necessarily a bad person. Certainly there can be bad effects. There can be bad repercussions.
Poor personality generally?
Yes. And I mean, like in that movie, The Cooler,
Yeah. You
know, the William Macy character, Bernie, I mean, he wasn't a bad person.
I felt sorry for him.
Yes.
Didn't you? Yeah.
He was a sorrowful person. You know, the sorrow just oozed out of him.
But he's not the kind of guy you'd want to sit down and have a beer with.
No, because he wears the weight of not only his own life, but the cares of the world on his shoulders at all times.
So true. So true. There's somebody in St. Louis that has the ability. This is uncanny. I've talked about this before. He can walk into a lounge, 100 people, within a half hour. I kid you not, Randall. The bar will empty, and this guy will be sitting there all by himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is uncanny to the point where the bartender wants to leave. I mean, it is that bad.
And it was probably an Irish bar, too. And they don't ever leave.
Yeah, and it was on St. Paddy's Day. Now, what's wrong with that guy? He's not a bad person. I mean, he's a nice guy, but he was like this William Macy character that people can somehow, they're drained by this guy. I call these guys energy zappers.
Yes, yes. Well, they're energy vampires and energy zappers and...
I tell you how unlucky he is. This his father hates him. They don't get along. He just went through a separation with his girlfriend. I mean, this guy is so unlucky. He is now the father, first time father, triplets. Triplets. Everything went wrong for this guy. I mean, you want kids and they want them to be healthy and everything else, but I mean, this guy, you know, first time around he gets triplets, and then she leaves him, and I mean, just a mess. But his whole life is that way.
Well, I really want to talk with you in the next hour, if at all possible, about some of my observations concerning intuition and these negative and positive charges associated with it, because I think when we start talking specifics about our own experiences and where in our bodies we've experienced what under what conditions and what sort of emotional charges really get our adrenaline flowing, then we start putting our finger on some answers.
Can people change the outcome? Can they change themselves?
I believe that people can change themselves. I know I have changed myself over time.
You mean you were a negative person?
I have been a negative person. I lived in Washington, D.C. For 20 years as a reporter covering Congress and the White House. I was a political reporter. And I started to feel as if human nature, you know, just based on the people that I was interacting with every day in that culture in Washington, D.C., that human nature was basically negative and that human nature was not to be trusted. And I started finding myself becoming cynical, not just a skeptical journalist, but a cynical journalist.
That's why I had to leave. Never would have guessed it about you.
That's why I had to leave.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that and how people could change their direction a little bit and get out of that negative and turn it more into a positive in just a moment. Randall Fitzgerald's website, of course, is drluck.com. It's linked up right under his name on coasttocoastam.com. His book is called Lucky You, Proven Strategies That You Can Use to Find Your Fortune. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Get it in writing with the After Dark newsletter. Subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505.